I'm Kayla Ali, and this is the Ali Perspective. And today I have a guest with me, my brother, Quinn. And if you hear me call him brother throughout the show, that's just what I call him. But I'm excited to have him here with me today. I had to convince him a little bit, you know. But he's a big part of why I got into sports. I had to watch him play football all those years and be dragged to all the games and everything. But before we start, and we're going to talk about college football and we're going to talk about the NFL. But before we get into that, how did you get into football and how did you gain your love for football?
My love for the game came from being around older cousins, Rashad, Shelton, Jamal, playing in the yard, you know, and then I was the youngest out of the group at that time. So playing with those guys learning the game, but being coached, but before them, it was Michael Junebug, Joe McClam, known as the Monster Man in Lake City, probably one of the best to ever come through. Yeah, Lake City, give him his flowers now. I'm just playing, but seriously, give him his flowers. He taught us the game, you know, by his name being so big and everybody who you would come into contact with, once they found out, you know, what my last name was, they would say, Joe's your uncle, the Monster Man. I'd be like, yeah. So he taught us the game. He would have little camps outside of the house for us during the summer, you know, where he'd get tires and make us go through, you know, little obstacle courses to get our footwork right. So he did that, and that was after he had to put in, you know, a shift of work where he was working at. He still made time to be able to come home and help us out with the game and teach us some things as far as what he knew from high school and what he did at Fayetteville State. So that's how I pretty much got into it, yeah.
And not only did he help you out with football, he also helped me out with softball, too. And all of my female cousins, Chrissy, Brittany, like, he had us on the side. Well, I'm the youngest of the youngest, so by the time I got there, it really was just me because you guys were in high school and, you know, things of that nature. But I hear the stories all the time about how on the side of the house, y'all having full games.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely did that. Again, shout out to Uncle Junebug. And I wanted to wear number 21 like him, but there was a guy who was a year older than me who his number was 21. So I could never get 21. And then by my senior year, I just stuck with six. So, yeah. But shout outs to Uncle Junebug, Joe McClam again. He definitely was he laid the blueprint out for us. And one, I wanted to live up to that name. You know, I could never get to the Monster Man name, but yeah. He definitely did a good job at getting us right and teaching us about the game.
And what's even funny, I wanted your number. I wanted number six playing softball, but it was people older than me, and they were number six, so I had to settle for number two. So it's crazy how things repeat themselves in little ways and different ways throughout life. But shout out to 600 Constitution because that house and those adults, our grandma, grandfather, aunts, and uncles, they laid a foundation and a path for us that was really like no other. So shout out to them. But, yeah, so now we'll get into college football. How do you feel about this 12-team playoff this year?
I think it's going to be different, but different in a good way. It gives a lot of teams the opportunity to play for these playoff spots, these 12 spots that they have now. And I would say that it makes it a little bit more interesting versus – you know, just only the top four normally that was chosen. Again, it gives people a little bit more to play for, not just settle for the bowl games that they have. So I like it. I really do like the idea of them expanding it to a 12-team playoff bracket as of now.
What team are you excited to possibly see in the 12-team format?
I would really say I'm hoping to see Colorado try to sneak in there if possible. Deion has taken a lot of flack. The last year wasn't so much of a good year for them. But this year they are, I think, 6-2 so far, 6-2 or 7-2.
Yeah.
So I want to see him be able to at least compete for a national championship so they can kind of quiet down some of the critics. And if he does make that 12-team playoff, I don't think you have to give him Coach of the Year. I think you have to, knowing the history of Colorado and just where they were years before he even got into to that program. I would say Colorado is a team that I'm hoping they could sneak in there.
That would definitely – this is their first time they've ever been – they've been bowl eligible since 2016. So what he's doing there and how that team has improved so quickly, and you would think that with a team that – he has a lot of new players on his team. Like, he really recruited and he really went out there. And so for him to get those guys to gel the way that they have in such a short amount of time, I think that I agree with you on that. Like, you got to put him – in the name, it put his hat in the name for Coach of the Year. And another, and a team that I kind of want to see if they can sneak in, and it won't even be sneak, is Indiana. Indiana right now is undefeated. This is the first time that I would probably say in, seems like maybe 20 plus years, possibly. I don't think I'm over exaggerating, but possibly, that they are like playing like meaningful football. And right now they're ranked top 10. And on top of that, they're sitting at the top of the Big Ten. and this is their coach's first year. So he completely turned around their program in not even a full year, I would say. And what's crazy is he's another one of Coach Saban's products. He was on the staff with Coach Saban. So I think you can also say that Coach Saban has one of the best coaching trees.
Oh, absolutely. If you take a look at the landscape of college football, a lot of coaches who has coached with Saban are now doing big things. You know, notably, Kirby Smart is one of them. Sarkisian is another one at Texas. And then you also have Lane Kiffin. Those guys are three of the biggest ones that come off, you know, to the top of my head, in which they're doing really good things with those programs. So, definitely, he is definitely one of, or if not the GOAT, and definitely one of the guys who can, you can go there and coach and know that you can potentially get the opportunity to be a head coach. So, and that comes from him being very detailed. You can tell by how he led those Alabama teams that they were really detail-oriented, and I guess that kind of trickled down to the coaches. Just from how he orchestrates a program, it kind of translates to the coaches that he has on his staff, and when they leave and go to different programs, it's almost like they pick up right where Saban has left them from. Mm-hmm. So, I would agree with that.
And another big conversation right now in college football is we're about to – approach the time where we get Heisman finalists. If there are three players that you think should definitely be Heisman finalists, who will your three players be?
Travis Hunter for one. Two would be the running back from Boise State,
Ashton Jeanty.
Couldn't think of his name right off, but him. And then I think you got to go with another guy in Shedeur Sanders, which, you know, of course, is going to be tight, and you don't want the votes to be split up between teammates. But if I had to give it to anybody as of right now, and we voting today, it would be Travis Hunter.
And I think for me, my top three would be Cam Ward, quarterback from Miami, Travis Hunter, of course, and Jeanty from Boise State. And
I forgot about Cam Ward.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Cam.
the only reason why I will give Cam the slight nudge over Shedeur is just because they're undefeated in their top three. And I know the competition hasn't been the best competition that they face, but they're a team that finds a way to win. Like, and I think he's one of the, he's never under pressure. He has great arm talent. He has great pocket awareness. Only thing about him is he's one of those quarterbacks where he trusts his arm so much that he's going to give you one interception a game because he's doing some crossbody pass that's, anyone to tell you that's low, you know?
Now, I will say that, and I really do think that Cam Ward is top five or top three when it comes to the Heisman race. I honestly thought that they would have moved Miami up a little bit sooner, but it's almost like they were stuck between that 10 and 7 range
for as forever. Far
as the rankings. And I thought that they should have got a little bit more credit because they do play good ball. Offensively, they are a really good team, and he has a few weapons. So, yeah, I'm sorry again, Cam Ward. You definitely are in that top three.
And they just they defeated Duke, and now that they are 8-0, and then with 6 ranked teams losing this past weekend, now they're ranked number 3. So, and if you look at the rest of their schedule, they should be able to run the table. And now with Clemson being out of the ACC championship as it stands right now with 2 losses, they have a really good shot of going to the ACC championship and winning the ACC championship. So it's going to be – and if they do that, then they're going to get a bye in the playoffs. It'll be – so that I think that's a team to watch for just because of how dynamic their offense is. And like you said, he has some really good weapons. I mean, he has 2 solid running backs. He has Restrepo, who just became the all-time leader wide receiver in catches and yards at Miami. Wow. And you know, like, that's crazy because Miami has had some.
You got guys like Michael Irvin, Santana Moss, and Andre Johnson. Even Devin Hester played a little bit of receiver. I think he was more defensively and specialist, but he still was out there. So that's a great group of guys who he has surpassed during his tenure at Miami. So congratulations to him on that.
Yeah, that was big time. I watched that game and I watched him break that record, and he broke it on a 60-yard touchdown pass from Cam Ward. And so shout out to Miami for what they're doing, and shout out to their head coach for, you know, rallying those guys. And Cam Ward is also one of those players that he thought about going to the draft last year, and they convinced him to stay one more year. And I think that has benefited him a lot. And I hope whatever team he goes to and he gets drafted, that they allow him to continue to develop. Because we've kind of seen young quarterbacks just go, they start, they don't do well, and then they're just benched.
Still have to go to the right situation.
Yes.
Looking at the landscape of the NFL as well, it's hard to say what's the right situation and what's not. But hopefully he get his opportunity to go to a solid organization that will put him in the right places.
And also, I want to give a shout out to South Carolina for beating top 10 Texas A&M. I mean, that was a big win for them. And you've been to a Carolina game. And how is that atmosphere?
Carolina definitely has top 5 environment. Now, mind you, I haven't been to all of the Power 5 schools to really see their environment. But I think Carolina is definitely top 5. Once you're there, it's almost like something that you would have never imagined. The fans are really into it. They're standing up cheering the entire time. Now that they have the light show, that's why I'm really mad that I missed that night game that they had. So I really think that Carolina has a top 5 environment. And again, it's one of those things where you have to be there with, you know, the sandstorm that they have going on and the student session that goes crazy. You definitely have to be there to experience it. And me being a Bama fan, I went to the Alabama and Carolina game in Tuscaloosa. And when I say I was surprised at how Alabama fans don't necessarily cheer. They do cheer. I'm not going to say they don't. But I thought that it would be a little bit more loud just with the history of the team and what they've been doing for so long. I just expected a little bit more. But Carolina definitely has a top 5 environment there at Williams-Brice.
And I'm glad you said that, because people have said time and time again that Alabama doesn't have, like, even a top 10 SEC environment, because they kind of pick and choose which game. Now, they say a night game or a game against a Georgia, a Auburn, or like those really like rivalry games. Mm-hmm. They said, now those are the games that you're like, okay, now yeah, Alabama is. This is a great environment, but I think it shouldn't be like that.
It shouldn't be like that. And the thing is, if you go to Willie B at any point in time during the season, I don't care if it's Old Dominion or like a team like that that they play early on in the year, FCS school, Willie B is still rocking. And that's in the mid of or the beginning of the season, and it's hot outside, and the end of August, the beginning of September. Willie B is still rocking. So I definitely give South Carolina credit for their fans for always coming in and having that stadium jumping. I think it translates over to the basketball arena with what Don is doing there at Carolina as well. And I didn't mean to switch it up, but just Carolina fans in general, I will give them that credit as far as them having the support and being there for the team. So, yeah, again, top five environment, I would give that to the South Carolina Gamecocks at Willie B.
I hope we have a point in our lives where we just get to travel and we just get to go to all of these environments and we can come back to you guys and say, these are our top 10 after we didn't travel. I'm telling you now, speaking it now, me and you, we're going to be able to do that.
Okay.
We're going to be able to do that and we're going to enjoy that. And anyone can get beat at any time. We've seen that happen this entire college football season so far. It doesn't matter what the team's record is. So when they try to put the hammer down and these are our 12 teams, and that's going to be a very interesting day. That's going to be probably one of the things that's most talked about. I even see now your Bama is back in the mix.
Bama is back in the mix, but I'm kind of skeptical about that. I'm not too sold on us as of right now. And I know it's getting close to the end of the season, but I haven't seen that same dominant Bama like I've been seeing for years and years. And again, you get that when you get a new head coach. And again, the standard isn't always going to be as high when you have Nick Saban. When you get Nick Saban, you know what you're getting. And then a lot of guys did transfer out. So, I'm not going to be too hard on them, but again, I'm not so sold on us winning the national championship. I will be very surprised if we even win and be a part of that 12-team playoffs, just because I know what we have coming down the line as far as the LSU, the Auburns. Auburn can always be a trap game no matter how good our team is. That's a big-time rivalry. So I'm concerned about the Auburn game. LSU is still LSU. That's a big time rivalry as well. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what Milroe and those guys do moving down the line to finish out the season. Hopefully we get in. I want us to get in, but again, I won't be surprised if we don't get in. You know,
is there a team that you think is going to win the national championship?
That's tough, and it's hard to say who is going to win. And I was talking to a few of my friends a couple of weeks ago about the same thing. The landscape of college football has changed so much.
Especially with the transfer portal.
Yeah, with the transfer portal, it's almost like every team is beatable. And it's so spread out there. It's like every team is even almost, mm-hmm. in a sense. Now, mind you, still have some organizations or programs that are above the rest. But at the end, it's almost like those top 10 or 12 teams, they can get beat at any point in time. And again, that goes back to the transfer portal and people being able to get talent that matches everybody else's talent, so the playing field is very even. So I can't say what team that I will pick, because again, everybody could get beat at any given time.
Yeah. The one team that I do think has a really good shot, and I'm gonna give it to Oregon. And only reason why I say Oregon is because they're the first team, if I'm not mistaken, to be Ohio State and Penn State. No, Ohio State and it's another Big Ten team, because you always have Ohio State and, oh, I'm blanking
Michigan
right now. I don't think they played Michigan.
I don't think they played Michigan. I can't remember off the
I
top
can't,
either.
But it was an Ohio State and it's another Big Ten team, but that's the first time in like 20 years, I think, that they've been beat by one, like one team has beat both of them in the same season.
Right.
And watching them play, and as an Oklahoma fan, Dillon Gabriel is a great quarterback.
He is. He definitely is.
And then you got Evan Stewart.
So they did beat Michigan.
Yeah, okay.
So they beat Michigan and Ohio State in the same year, which is a really good, you know, to have on your resume, especially coming from what they've came from, being in that new conference.
Yes.
You know, people always used to say that the Pac-12 was, you know, a little finesse. And the Big Ten was a little bit more tougher with the guys like Wisconsin and teams like that who can really run the ball. Iowa's power teams like that. Hard-nosed football. So seeing Oregon come from the Pac-12 and kind of get that name off of them as far as being that finesse conference, it really shows that those guys can play ball as well.
But when that playoff comes, I'm going to be lock loaded in front of my TV because it's going to be great football.
I agree. I definitely agree.
And another college football team I do want to talk about before we switch over to the NFL is my SC State Bulldogs. And that's because on Thursday, last week Thursday, we went out and we beat North Carolina Central, who was a ranked FCS opponent. They already had them slated to win the MEAC. They had a lot of great talent coming back. Their coach, he hits the transfer portal really well as well, even though, you know, it's a smaller HBCU. But what Chinnis is doing with SC State, especially offensively, I don't remember a time where I can say our offense is 100% dynamic and explosive. Like, any play can just go for a touchdown. And that's just from the time that I've been able to watch State, like, really watch State and understand what's going on in football. So you might have a little bit more insight.
So I would say Richard Q. And Richard is a guy from Florence, South Carolina, played at Wilson High School. And I played against him, actually, in high school. And he's actually the all-time leading passer at South Carolina State. So they had a couple of guys who could make big plays. And I think that's probably the last quarterback since or that has came after him, which is Phoenix, that can actually throw the ball around a yard and be dynamic. And they had a few running backs as well over the years, but that offense back then was dynamic as well. And I think they won a MEAC championship or two with Richard Q at the helm playing quarterback. So that's as far as that I can remember going back. And then after Q, it was, you know, trying to find a true pocket passer. Mm-hmm. They had a few that were athletes, I would have said, or I would say, with the Wileys and with Corey Fields and those guys like that. But, yeah, Phoenix is definitely doing a really good job. And that offense that Chinnis is running, like, it's crazy because at every single play, somebody is open, you know. And they got good running backs as well to complement the passing game. So it kind of keep offenses or defenses off balance a little bit. It's hard to really respect both the pass and the run, you know, because you spread people out and that leaves the box light. So then you can run, you know. And then when you try to put seven, eight in the box, you know, then you got the three or four wide and you just need a receiver to beat a corner. I mean, I know it's college, but it's hard to have three lockdown corners.
Yeah.
And South Carolina State has three or four really good receivers. So at every play, somebody will be open because I trust those receivers versus those DBs to be able to go out there and get open and make a play. So, yeah, shout out to the Bulldogs.
And they next week they go on the road and they play Howard, and that's going to be a tough one just because of the MEAC is another conference where anybody can get beat anytime. It doesn't matter your record. It's just that type of conference that we're in. So, but what I do like about Coach Bear, he always say we have to be 1-0. It doesn't matter what you did the week before. You have to be 1-0 going into this week. So shout out to him and what he's been able to do in just his first season.
Right.
And he had a lot of transfers that came with him from Benedict, and people thought that, you know, those guys are D2. They're not going to be able to make it or be as dynamic as they were on the D2 level, now at the D1 level. And I can honestly say his players has proven that wrong, because because we're talking about Caden High. I mean, he's
a quarterback as well.
Yeah, I think Eric Phoenix.
He played at.
He was there for 3 years, and then he went to Murray State, and then he ended up at South Carolina State. But he was another one. Him, Caden High, and blanking on names, number 19, DN, on the defensive side, and he leads FCS in sacks right now. And he also came from Benedict.
Okay.
So those players have helped us a lot. So I think sometimes we have to not look so much at D2, D1, because like you say, in the landscape of the transfer portal now, you're having guys who are really D1 talent. They have to go to D2s or JUCOs or
academic purposes or different things like that, getting recruited late. So, yeah, I get it. I definitely understand it. Because if you can play, you can play.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, I had kind of, you know, some questions about him bringing a lot of those guys from Benedict and was kind of questioning that myself, mm-hmm. just thinking, are they good enough to play in the MEAC? And mm-hmm. like you said, they definitely has proven that. But I think it goes a lot to what Tennis Berry has going over there at the program. Like, I think he is a really good coach. I think that he has brought a new feel, a new sense of looking for the right word. He's just bringing that swag. Back to South Carolina State. He's following up a legend, you know. Buddy Pough is definitely a GOAT as far as coaching, and a big time in Orangeburg, a legend at that university. So he has some big shoes to fill, and I think that he's definitely doing a great job at starting out and being a great coach at the university as well. So, yeah.
So shout out to my Bulldogs. Hope you guys can continue to win, and maybe you can have homecoming part two in Atlanta. So now let's switch over to the NFL. Okay, so we're about halfway through the season. Who would you say has been your biggest surprise, and whether it's good or bad? And if your surprise is good, who would you say it has been your biggest disappointment this season?
My biggest surprise would have to be the Washington Commanders. That's the biggest surprise. I'm upset with the Bengals. I'm upset with the Cowboys, but that's normal. And I would say, I know Miami kind of had issues, but the Jets, I really thought the Jets would be more than what they are at this point as well. You know, with the hype of Aaron Rodgers coming back, him having solid weapons like Garrett Wilson and Adam Lazard, and just guys, and I'm not saying Adam Lazard is like this big time weapon, but he had chemistry with Rodgers from the Green Bay team. And now that they got Devontae Adams, I still don't see it. And it's not like they don't have the players again, because at the receiving core, Devontae Adams, Garrett Wilson, Lazard, and then running back, Breece Hall, like he has the weapons to do so. And the defense has always been the defense.
On paper, they are a great roster. Yeah,
they are. So that was kind of shocking to me. But going back to the biggest winners or surprises would be the Washington Commanders. I never thought that Jaden Daniels would have came out this hot. Like, he is really a baller. And, I mean, I should have seen that from him winning the Heisman at LSU, but he has definitely came out swinging and putting people on notice that he is here and that he can play in the league and be, if not a top 10 quarterback, because that's what he's playing like at this point, you know. Even coming off that rib injury, he still came back this past Sunday, and played pretty well. And they got the win, so I'm very surprised with the Commanders.
And I had Jaden Daniels being Rookie of the Year. And I know many people thought that it would be Caleb Williams, but he went to the Bears.
That's another thing, too. And I think he had a little bit of injuries in the beginning. But I thought with that receiving core, DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, and Rome, a Doomsday.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they would have been a little better. But, you know.
Because I thought, I was one of those people that think that they didn't give Justin Fields a fair shot, mm-hmm. mainly because they never built a team around him. And then to see that in this offseason, they put a team around Caleb Williams. And then now he's underperforming. And it's just his rookie year, so he still has time to grow, and they still. But on paper, like we've said, they should be better than what their records say. Same way with the Bengals. I mean, you have Joe Burrow at quarterback, and you have Ja'Marr Chase, who if I'm not mistaken, he's top three of not leading the league in receiving yards. Then you have the sack leader on defense, and I know three players can't make your entire team, but they are three great pieces, and right. your record does not reflect that.
I agree.
And you're playing in a really tough.
That division is tough.
Even though the Browns are 2-6, that's still not a you go in and you're going to beat them. Right. Like that's not a thing. And then I also think the Ravens. I mean,
the Ravens are the Ravens.
The Ravens are the Ravens, and it looks like maybe Lamar might be a 3-time MVP. How he's playing. And then, I mean, giving Derrick Henry to the Ravens is just like.
Chico. But, hey, I do, outside of my Patriots, I do like to see the Ravens play. Mm-hmm. Just that organization has always been so top tier. Class act. So I definitely like what the Ravens have going on, and I like Lamar. I think I would prefer to watch Lamar over any other quarterback in the league right now.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that. And I also want to I had a conversation with a friend, and we were talking about Derrick Henry. And he said to me that when you watch Derrick Henry play, he is average. And I told him that you are absolutely insane, because there's no way that man is average. And I want to know your opinion on it, because as someone, like, I didn't play football. So I think people who do play football sometimes, they have a little bit better insight. But in my mind, I'm like, this is a guy who is really built like a middle linebacker. My friend said he's just big. That's the only reason that gives him the advantage of running back.
Okay, so. Look, if you actually watch Derrick Henry, and I've been watching him since Alabama, the first quarter or two, Derrick Henry is four a carry, you know, two or three a carry. And when you get to halftime, it's probably like he has 50 yards. And most times people are like, oh, he ain't really doing nothing. But he's one of those backs where he wears you down. Like, the more carries he gets, the stronger he gets. And that's what you need. And that's tough to be 6'4", 250, 260, and then having to carry the ball that many times. Like, I don't think people understand. Yeah, he's big, but he's also taking a lot of licks.
Like, a lot.
Like, he's taking a lot of hits. And for him to still be that good over this long period of a time, like, the running back life is already short.
Yeah.
But to have him still putting up the numbers that he's putting up, I don't know how somebody would call him average. And then I think the game in Tampa, they clocked him at going like 21 miles per hour as far as some running. So, I mean, I don't know how many other people are 6'5", over like 250, 260, who running over 21 miles per hour. So, he is definitely another type of animal. And I think they say that they compare Derrick Henry to Eric Dickerson. Mm-hmm. And I could see that. Both were really big backs who can do everything. Mm-hmm. Mind you, he still can catch out of the backfield, even though they don't use him that much out of mm-hmm. the backfield. They like to use Justice Hill. But he still is a guy who can do everything. A three-down back for the most part. But, you know, you got to let people have their opinion and say what they want to say.
Yeah.
And go from there.
And, I mean, I looked at his high school numbers, college numbers, NFL numbers, the amount of carries and beatings that his body and legs have taken for him to still be doing. I think he might be one of the last running backs that we see hit the 10,000 career rushing yard mark. Because, like, the next closest people they're not really in the league like that. Or they're not getting as many carries or maybe Barkley.
That's who I was gonna say. Maybe Saquon. But the game has transitioned to so much of a passing league to, you know, it's hard to really say as far as like a running back reaching that 10,000 yard mark in a career. That's tough.
Yeah.
That's tough. So,
and also Derrick Henry's high school coach should probably be in jail right now because that boy had over 1,300 carries in 4 years in high school. One game he had 57 carries for 456 yards.
I played with a running back in high school. I think he topped out. We played King Street, King Street High School, and he had, I want to say, 49 carries.
Jesus,
49 carries that game. So I mean, I've not 60 something like you said, but definitely he had 49.
That's crazy. But in high school, man, you got to do what you got to do. You got to go with what's working. And if their running back is working, man, you got to use them. You got to use them. So Chiefs, how does the NFL let Patrick Mahomes get Hopkins? Now, that's another cheat code.
I think that happened. People sleep on D-Hop. Mind you, me watching that game last night, this is the first true quarterback that he's ever had. Playing a little bit with Deshaun Watson. This is probably the best quarterback he's ever had since he's been in the league.
Yeah.
You got to look at his numbers. He still was putting up 1,000-yard seasons with a below-average quarterback.
Yeah.
You know? So I think a lot of people were sleeping on him because his numbers didn't particularly look like the same old D-Hop. And I think I'm 31, so I think D-Hop may be like 33, if I say. So I think that's what it was. They're sleeping on him, but they just woke up a giant. Because he had two tubs last night.
Like, in his first game.
Yeah, he had two tubs last night. No, he played last week.
No, he did.
He played last week. He didn't have, you know, the big numbers. Yeah. But that's normal because that was his first game.
Mm-hmm.
And him having to learn the, you know, the playbook and things like that. But this week, he has sure hands. So that's what Mahomes has been missing, a sure-handed receiver outside of Kelsey. But it's going to be scary. If they can get Rashee Rice back,
Pacheco.
Worthy.
Pacheco's out for the season.
Pacheco might be. I'm not sure.
I can't remember the extent of his injury.
They picked up Kareem Hunt, who is a guy who can get the job done.
Yeah, and he was with the team before.
He was with them before. So.
Yeah.
They 9-0.
8-0.
8-0. 8-0. 8-0. So,
8-0.
I mean, they are one of those sleeper teams. And it happened last year as well, you know. You looked at them and was like, yeah, they don't have the receivers or they not playing as well.
Because Patrick Mahomes has not been playing well.
Yeah.
Last night was his best game of the season.
Yeah. I'm surprised, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
And with the addition of D-Hop, I think that they can definitely win a division.
Mm-hmm.
Their AFC West, I think that they can win that division. And then it's going to be interesting to see in the playoffs.
Because it's a lot of good teams.
Yeah.
In the NFL, I mean, like you said, you got the Commanders. Then the Commanders just picked up Lattimore from the Saints to help them on defense, and their defense has been playing good. And then that's going to be a battle between them and the Eagles. Cowboys and Giants. So it's just the Commanders and the Eagles. Then on the other side, the Ravens and the Steelers are going to be competing, but the Steelers are going into, they have the toughest remaining schedule, so we'll see how that go, but I think that Russell Wilson has been in positions like that before. I think that Mike Tomlin, who continues to have winning season after winning season, and T.J. Watt being the player that he needs to be when he needs to be, you can't count them out either. Can't count the Ravens out.
That's very surprising as well, but I'm not surprised because no matter what Tomlin has faced, year after year, he's always managed to finish over 500 or better.
Yeah.
So I'm not too surprised.
I was, only thing I was a little bit surprised about was how Justin Fields, how he played so well. I mean, he accounted for 10 touchdowns, only one interception, and they should have been 5-1. They shouldn't have lost to the Cowboys. And then people were shocked when he switched and went with Russell. And that first half, Russell did not look good.
He looked bad that first
he
half.
He did not look
he
good.
He did look bad that first half. But I guess that's where the experience comes in, the years that he's been playing the game. That kind of, you know, gave him a little bit more confidence and just but you know what probably really gave him the confidence? Tomlin and those guys not taking him out.
Yeah.
You know, and let him know that you are a guy and go out there and win the game. That could be a confidence booster for players as well. So maybe that was it, or maybe he just had to get the first half jitters out because he hasn't played in a while. But yeah, I'm surprised, but I'm not surprised at the Steelers.
And so before we go, last thing, who do you think or who would you want to see in the Super Bowl this year?
I want Lamar to break through.
Same.
I want the Ravens to go from the AFC. And from the NFC, that's going to be tough. Golly. The AFC is so balanced almost.
Yeah.
If you look at the divisions, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Baltimore and Detroit.
Oh, yeah.
Baltimore and Detroit.
I like to watch Detroit play. I don't know what it is. I like to watch Detroit.
Detroit got to get another edge rusher before the season is over, though.
Yeah.
They need to go ahead and trade for Max Crosby.
Ooh.
They should have get that deal done before the trade deadline.
Because Max and then when Aiden Hutchinson get back healthy.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And Crosby wants out, so.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me on my show. Like, I really enjoy talking to you on a platform like this because we talk like this all the time at home. But and next time you come back, I got to get Rashad and Shelton here too. And because that's going to be a really fun show that we can do and we can just sit down and talk because they have good insight on the game as well. But thank you for being here and I appreciate it.
No problem at all.
And once again, I'm Kayla Ali, and this is the Ali Perspective. Please make sure you like, comment, and subscribe. And you can also like, comment, and share for our podcast on Spotify and Apple.